Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, October 30th. I'm Ray Graff. The coin and stamp experts are back for another hour of calls from all you collectors out there. Bob Scott and David Tripp are here. So if you're enthusiastic about coins and or stamps, you want to call, and call now. 800-348-2551. If you're blasé about it, just relax and kick back. It'll be entertaining all the same. 800-348-2551 or... you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Lots to talk about in this stamp and coin world is what I want to try to say. Ah, I'm such a wordsmith. All right, you know what? Let's quit while we're ahead. We'll end the billboard. I'll see you after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. This is the exciting moment for all you stamp and coin collectors out there. We welcome back our resident experts. First up, David Tripp. He's the former director of Sotheby's Coin Tapestry at Musical Instrument Departments. He's author of Illegal Tender, Gold Greed, and the Mystery of the Lost 1933 Double Eagle, as well as a fine art consultant. And he's also a cartoonist. His Christmas cards are the stuff of legend. Also joining us this afternoon, Bob Scott. He was a curator to a private collection, senior technical specialist at Christie's, head of the stamp departments at both Sotheby's and Bonhams. He's currently a private consultant whose clients include Sotheby's, for whom he cataloged the world's most valuable stamp. It's great to have these guys back on the show. If you found a treasure you want to know about, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. David and Bob, welcome back. How are you guys doing?
We are well. We're weathering the Yankees' demise, but beyond that, life is good.
Are you're not an Orioles fan?
I'm a born and raised New Yorker.
Okay. Well, what? Zach the engineer is giving you the victory salute. All right. You're not a Mets fan.
I am a Mets fan, but you know they're not in the World Series.
I agree. Okay, that's my philosophy as well.
Thank you.
When the Mets are eliminated, usually June,
we go to the default.
We go for the default in the Yankees. So it's Halloween time. There's some exciting stuff. If you had a coin struck by the real Dracula, I think we should start with that.
The real Dracula, yes.
Ooh, blay, blay.
His name was Vlad Tepes.
Yeah, the Impaler, right?
Vlad the Impaler. He is Dracula, which is his father was Dracul, the dragon.
Right.
And he was Dracula, which is the diminutive of dragon.
Little dragon.
He was the dragonette. And there are coins of his struck in the middle of the 15th century, which are itty-bitty, teeny-tiny. They're about... weight-wise, about 150 of them to an ounce.
Wow.
So they're about the tiny little bits of silver that are about the size of your little fingernail.
Why so small?
Not enough to kill a werewolf.
Okay. All right. I can see how this is going.
Should we just go off the air now?
Yeah,
Save everybody a little bit of time.
I think we're done. Well, that's cool. So how much are they worth?
Depending on the condition, and I'll show you a picture of one, very unappealing, unattractive little coin. That's the actual size for those of us. It's a nothing, but it's a ban. B-A-N is the name of the denomination.
Yeah.
And you can get one for anywhere from $5,000 to $7,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, they're that small. They must have been dropped all over the place.
Well, exactly. Probably, you know, he gave one to everybody before he impaled them or something.
Oh,
like
really?
That.
That's nice. That's okay. Thanks. Thanks, David. And the list that you gave me, yet another big treasure that I didn't find. So... all right, you have to rub it in.
I love rubbing it in.
Okay,
because
you
like it.
Inept metal detecting is me.
This was found in the west of England in Somerset. It contained approximately 2,500 silver pennies.
I think I heard about this.
That were struck by Harold II and William the Conqueror, 1066 and all that.
Mercy.
And it's doubled the number of coins known of Harold in any event. Some of the imagery is fantastic. And it was a group of friends who went out. They did it all by Hoyle. They went to the farmer that owned the land. They got permission to dig on the property. And he was trying out his new detector. And he went with five or six friends, and they started popping these little goodies out of the ground.
Unbelievable.
So they are sharing the hoard, which has been bought by the British government.
And that's the rule, right? The British government has to buy it and give you money.
You record it. You tell them about it so they know where it is. Then the government brings in valuers. They go through the material. If the government wants to buy it, they have to give you a fair market price for it, which they do. One of Bob's and my good friends is one of the valuers in England that goes in to the British Museum and does this. In any case, as somebody said today, it was like winning the lottery but waiting 5 years to get paid.
Is that how long it takes?
Yeah. 4.3 million
pounds.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
$5.5 million. And for Ray, because it is Thanksgiving, here is the article, and you can look at the pile, go home, and weep.
You know what? Thank you. You know what? If they ever find a trove of nails from the Norman Conquest, I am all in, because I'm good at that. I can find the nails.
Okay. Well, you just have to find... do we know a nail appraiser, Bob?
Well...
No, but...
You can...
Utility poles.
Utility poles. There we go.
They use dated nails, and people collect them.
So, you know, you usually provide, and by the way, the number here is 800-348-2551 if you have a stamp or coin question for David Tripp at Bob Scott. You usually, David, provide the sheet of show prep for me.
Yes.
But I did my own show prep today, and I found something.
Well, I don't know anything about it, and I don't care to.
Well, darn it. Rare dime bought by Ohio farm family and hidden for decades fetches $500,000 at auction. Now, this I find interesting. It's a rare dime. It's from 1975, and it's from the San Francisco Mint. But okay, you know about it. All right, you tell me about it.
I mean, it's a famous rarity. It has no mint mark.
So how do you know it's from San Francisco?
Well, it was found in a proof set with other San Francisco, and the only proofs that were made in San Francisco. So it comes in a proof set. It is proof quality, but it has no S. Nobody really knows the answer to the question.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Can you crack a proof set? Can you open it and put in whatever
These
you want?
These are sealed by the mint, and the old ones were sort of crinkly, crunkly cellophane, and they were sealed between each pane.
Yeah.
There's no way you could have popped one
so
out.
So this is legit.
It is legit. It's been known to be around for years. I think
there's two of them.
There's two of them. It's even
there
in our magic red book that we advise everybody get.
Yep.
It's one of these rarities that theoretically there should be more than one, more than two, but nobody's ever come across one.
So how many proof sets are there for that year for San Francisco?
Well, I will find out for you.
Okay. Was somebody selling them? I mean, it seems a little...
It's an oddity that nobody has yet...
It's an anomaly.
Here's the thing, though. I think, according to the article I read, the mom bought this in 1978, which is a few years after this proof set was out, for $18,000.
Oh,
so it's been known to be out there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the point. It has been known to be out there. It's just that it's come to market. So there were, in 1975 S, the proper ones, with the S's, 2.8 million
Yikes.
Were made.
Okay. Okay. Nothing special.
That's a lot.
Right. And with the no S dime.
Two. That, to me, stinks. There's something wrong there.
Well, I mean, I think we've discussed this before, but, and this is not to cast aspersions on the fine men and women who
Even
work for the United
exactly
States.
Even though that's exactly what
mint,
you're about to do.
But they have a 250-year history of being very enterprising individuals who have figured out how to line their own pockets.
You're kidding me.
Oh, no. I mean, the famous 1804 silver dollar that everybody talks about. Well, first of all, there were no 1804 dollars made in 1804. The quote-unquote original ones were made in 1834 for official purposes, but not in 18.
Mm-hmm.
And then some mint, it became, collectors started coming to the mint and said, hey, do you have any 1804 dollars? And they said, well, no, we don't. And this is in the 1850s. They said, but, you know, give us a week or two.
Oh,
get back to us. And they knocked off five or six of them. And these are coins that now sell for $3 or $4 million.
That's a federal crime, right?
Hey, who's looking? Who's asking? Who's talking? I mean, there are... you know, as they say, I could write a book on all the fiddles.
But you did. That the, well, you wrote a book about what? The
one fiddle. 1933. All right, that was just theft. Yeah. But the ones that they made themselves, what we call fantasy coins, it's the U.S. Mint, it's famous.
That is so interesting.
Oh, but people do it all the time.
The double denomination quarters of a few years ago, the $1.25 coins that one side had a state's quarter, the other side had Sacagawea dollars.
What?
Okay, yeah. These are coins that could not, as they say, exist in nature.
So they did it on, what you're implying or you're actually saying, they did it on purpose.
Yes.
And has anybody gone to prison
actually,
for that?
In that case, a couple guys did.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But a couple others got out.
We have examples in the stamp world where printing companies have archives. And at some point, maybe there are small fires at the archives. And lots of materials disappear. And then, lo and behold, a great amount of this sort of material appears on the market.
Oh, interesting. How do you know that the stuff that reappears is actually legitimate?
Because you can tell.
You can tell?
It would be more expensive to forge it,
So
it's even easier to have the original stuff. But that's how half the proof. How does half the pattern material, which is basically coin proof, how do they get to the market?
Well, one of the cases is they made a lot of them, they didn't sell them.
Yeah.
But a couple of Mint employees sold a couple of pieces out of the Mint collection. Oops, that they're not supposed to. This goes back, 125 years. They were bought by a collector. And when a hue and cry came, he did not want to have any part of it, and he paid a lot of money for them. I mean, he paid, I think, something in the neighborhood of $10,000 in 1911. I mean, you know,
it's a lot of cash, stuff. Yeah.
So he gave them back, but the dealers didn't have the money to refund. So he said, well, you got to make me whole. So they went to their friends at the Mint and said, look, we'll give you these two super rare coins. These were $100 gold coins. They never struck for circulation. And in return, they gave them a whole lot of pattern coins. So he swapped that. He actually wrote a book based on it.
Fascinating.
And this collector later became the Secretary of the Treasury for Franklin Roosevelt.
Well, of course. what could be
nothing
better?
Wrong here. But I might add, talking about the 1975 No S Dime, that they got $500,000 for it a week ago. The other one was sold only 5 years ago for $436,000.
Yeah.
So not the best of investments. It was up, but I don't know whether one was
nicer than the other. They paid $18,000 for it in 1978, so, I mean, that's a pretty good investment.
Yes, but we then have to figure out if the Dow was at, 400, and if you'd taken that $18,000 and put it in there.
All right. You're killing
me. Or if you'd bought Bitcoin in 1972 when it didn't exist.
You know what? Let's take a break or I cancel the show. 800-348-2551. Oh, we're off to a rollicking start. It's David Tripp and Bob Scott. Stamps and coins, and we'll get to the phones coming up. I tell you, those Germans had a dark sense of humor. 800-348-2551. It's Stamps and Coins today with Bob Scott and David Tripp. All right, very quickly, before we get to the phones, you showed me this picture, David Tripp, and there's a bunch of people lining up to get tickets, and Death is handing the tickets out. What is this very
This
quickly?
Is a German satirical medal that was made to commemorate, we will not say celebrate, the sinking of the Lusitania.
That is in poor taste, Germany.
It was in poor taste, but it was meant to show that the British knew that there were U-boats, and yet it was all about economy, it was all about business at all cost, and that the Cunard Line knew that there was a chance they would be torpedoed. And so when it was torpedoed, the artist, his name was Carl Goetz, who was known for satirical medals, issued this. And it's a group of people lined up at the Cunard ticket thing, and it is Death in the form of a skeleton.
And the other side is the sinking of the Lusitania.
Right. But the thing is that the medal is dated the 5th of May, 1915, and that's an error on the part of the engraver, which made the English think, because the Lusitania didn't sink until 2 days later, wasn't. They thought that the medalists knew and it was pre-planned medal. So then the English turned it around and created copies of this medal.
Amazing.
In England and circulated thousands of them.
Incredible.
But it's a great piece of history.
Well, the number here is 800-348-2551. Before we get... It's a dark show already.
It's Halloween. We need sound effects. Creaking doors.
Before we get to the calls, talk about weird. Bob Scott, you brought in a death warrant or something? What is that?
I've got an invitation, a postal card with an invitation to the execution of a Mr. George Smith on June the 5th, 1893. And they used to mail these through just... put a stamp on and put them in the mail, and you had to turn up with your invitation.
Did you have to RSVP if you weren't going?
Was it regrets only?
Regrets
only.
No, but you are respectfully invited to be present at the execution of, provided by law, Mr. George Smith.
How much are those worth?
A couple of $100.
Holy mackerel. And so you said before the show this guy escaped?
Oh, he escaped with another condemned man.
Yeah.
And it's quite well written up. And they almost got out of the building. And in fact, if they'd have been a little smarter, they would have done.
Wow.
And they got caught and took back and dispatched. But it's fascinating. The car actually lists the crime. He was convicted of killing his wife.
He shot her right in the chest.
He shot her in the chest.
Yes,
and
ouch.
He appealed to the Supreme Court, and they said, yep, we think you should swing.
Ouch. Okay, well, let's go to the phones and see if something else bad can happen. 800-348-2551 is our number. Stamps and Coins today with Bob Scott and David Tripp. Karen is in Voorheesville. Hello, Karen.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Karen.
Hello, Karen.
I have a question regarding a stamp collection that I inherited. It was my father's and my grandfather's. I have no idea about the value. He did have a coin collection that was appraised around $30,000. So I think that the stamp collection might be valuable, but I have no idea where I can get it appraised. I've asked around locally, and I can't find anybody.
Okay, well, we're not doing explicit referrals here, but Bob, you might have some general information.
Yeah, the thing is, it's really about time periods. Is it a modern collection? Is it something that was bought from the post office, say, throughout the 50s? And what sort of time period were they collecting? Was it 40s, 50s, 60s?
My grandfather was probably before the 50s, and my father was probably 60s and 70s.
Right. I mean, if they were buying stamps if you go back to the 20s and 30s, you've got a chance. If they bought slightly interesting things, you could actually have something that has some reasonable value. If they were buying basically unused stamps from the post office, that's pretty much what they're going to be worth today. But it's all a case of where did they buy them? And are they in albums?
Go ahead, Karen.
They aren't in albums. I don't believe that they're in albums. Some of them are in the original, not parchment paper, but something like that. And they did go to
glassy stamp paper
shows and coin shows.
And are they mostly unused?
Yes.
Then your best advice is...
I think so.
If it turns out... Well, there's an email address we put out afterwards. If you find something that's anomalous, you can give us you can send us an email and we can have a look. But if it's basically modern and it's from the 30s, 40s, and 50s, unless you have stamps that are really worth... If the denominations are a dollar or higher... then that might be something, but otherwise it's essentially it'll be a nice thing to keep, not something that is worth selling.
Okay. And now, you know, while we're here and while you're here, Karen, what's your email address, fellas?
It's coinandstampguys, all spelled out, @Burke.com.
coinandstampguys@Burke.com. Karen, thanks a lot. To be clear, neither Bob nor David are...
dealers per se, but you'll offer some advice for nothing.
Per se, but we are not dealers at all.
This is not business.
We do not buy and sell coins.
Because we can't do that kind of business.
We can direct a little bit, but we don't, you know, it's not.
It's very kind of you. You get so many emails, and I feel kind of bad about forwarding some of them because you're busy fellas, right? In theory?
Yeah.
We try to be.
All right, fair enough.
We try to be.
Let's go to Stratford, New York. Doris, you're on.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Doris.
My question is a bit like Karen's, in that I'm asking about an inherited collection of coins.
Yeah.
And it has to do with, is if no one in the family is interested in having the coin collection or finding it interesting to look at the coins, might we be financially better off to sell the collection and invest the money so that it can be distributed to our children? Or is it better to hang on to those coins? Will they increase in value at the same rate as investments increase in value?
Well, it's ever a conundrum. We try and work this out. Depends on what the type of coins are. Very much like Bob again. If the coins are what we would call classic numismatic rarities or something like that, yes, they can have long-term collectible value. If they are, shall we say, purchased from the U.S. Mint proof sets and things like that, with the exception of 1975 for the most part, the values are not going to move that much because they were made in such vast quantities that it's not going to happen. But if nobody in the family has any interest, there was a gentleman I worked on his collection many, many years ago, a very wealthy and interesting man who was in his 90s. And he had a fabulous collection of coins. And he said, you know, I'm 92 years old. And he said, I figure it's about time I start worrying about my estate.
Right.
And he said, it's easier to divide money than stuff. So from that point of view, you know, If you give your son a quarter that you think is worth $100 and your daughter two nickels that you think are worth $100,
you'll get it wrong.
It's a balancing act that you may not get. However, if you cash them in and you've got $200 bills, it's easy to figure out which way they go.
And let's talk about the base metal value in the last 12 months.
Yeah. Okay, and gold is way up, yeah?
Gold, point.
I had a lady call me in the beginning of the year, and she had some coins, gold coins that she had inherited, just bullion coins that she had inherited from, and she needed the name of somebody, and she was out on the West Coast, and she said, should I sell? I said, something I can't, if I had that crystal ball, I wouldn't be answering these questions.
Exactly.
But it was at $2,000 an ounce, and in my experience, that was as high as I'd ever seen it. And, you know, the decision was hers to take. She thought it was fine, and she sold them, and she was very happy. Who was to know that gold was going to go up another $700 in the next 10 months?
Yeah. And silver
and
has gone up well.
And people are calling for $3,000 gold.
Amazing. Doris, you want to follow up very quickly before we go?
Oh, I would just tell you that many of the coins are 1800s, lots of Indian head pennies from the 1860s. The two most valuable coins are 1863, I think is the year, but certainly in the 1860s. Mm-hmm. $2.50 gold coins. They're smaller than a penny.
Okay.
But they're probably in the whole collection the most valuable.
Well,
but the box itself,
it's going
coins,
to depend on the value. I mean, on the condition.
Is that California gold?
Well,
or is
that
a regular two and a half?
So, to give you an idea, in 1863, will be an 1863 S San Francisco. That was the only place they made them that year. It's worth at least $1,500.
$1,500.
And it could be up to many thousands beyond that if it's in really tip-top condition.
Doris, thanks a lot for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Bob Scott. He'll handle the stamp questions. David Tripp handles the coin questions. Has it really been 20 years since you've been doing Vox Pop?
I have. It is. Yes, I know.
No, I don't remember. I was here then, but I don't remember.
You were a baby.
That was a baby. Were you on the show too, Bob?
I came about a year later.
I came on Ray, let's see, no, it was Joe. Joe Donahue interviewed me on when my book came out. It's been 20 years since the book was published.
I'll be darned.
And when we got off the air, he said, you know, hey, David, would you mind coming on answering a few coin questions?
That's so cool.
And so about a month later,
there you are.
And, you know, the chains that you guys put around people's ankles
right.
and attach them to the chairs, they're getting rusty, but they're holding.
Well, here's to another 20 years.
And you're still going to be here, right?
No, far from it.
And the Mets still won't be in this.
Cut
World
it out, man. 800.
Oh, that's a matter of time.
That hurts. 800-348-2551. Stamps and coins today. You know, obviously, the coin topic didn't have enough pizzazz. You had to bring the stamp guy on.
I kept getting, literally, kept getting stamp questions. And to me, it's lick 'em, stick 'em. And that's what Bob's for.
Does that offend you when he says stuff like that?
Not at all. I mean, I was a groupie for the show. I used to listen to it, and I thought it was absolutely fabulous. And when David called and said, you want to do it, I was absolutely terrified.
And as Bob has always told me, stamps are art you can lick.
Yeah, art you can spend and art you can lick. Stamps and coins.
All right, let's just drop the subject, and we'll go to Great Barrington. Sky, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm glad you guys are still on with this show. I love your show.
Thanks.
I just have a basic question about which quarters have the highest silver content and how you would determine their value if you wanted to have them looked at.
Well, the whole nature of coinage is that they all weigh the same and they all have the same metallic content. So silver coins, whether they be quarters, half dollars, up until 1964, that's the bright line date, were made of 90% silver. And to put it in an easier way of understanding it, each one has a 0.18 ounces of pure silver in it.
So
silver is currently about
$35.
So figure they scrap right now, a quarter would scrap for about $6.
Okay. And what about a dime? What about a mark?
I'd have to do the math, but it's less.
It's the same pro rata, basically. So it's seven, it's two.
A quick question.
Go, Scott, go.
Just a quick question. So would they be more worth more as scrap, or can you legally
scrap? They're
always
theoretically, if it's worn and beat up, the scrap value is all a dealer is going to give you. If it's a better date, as we've gone through, and that relies on the specificity of whether it was a 1932D, for example, quarter, let's say, first year that they made Washington quarters, that's a collectible date. On the other hand, if you have a 1964, it's going to be worth comparably less. And if it's in worn condition, then a dealer probably won't pay you much more than scrap.
All right, Sky, thanks a lot. So it's up through 64.
64 is the last date that they made them out of silver.
Interesting.
And then they started giving us tin for our pockets.
You know, my daughter lives in a place, she's at college, and it's a coin-operated,
the Coinstar machines?
Mm-hmm. It's a coin. They have
yeah.
those.
Yeah.
And so when she wants to do her laundry, and I keep telling her, and she doesn't listen, just check. You never know if there's a 64 or before.
I met a guy, I met his son, a collector out in Carson City.
Yeah.
And amazing coin collector. He was into it and he bought really rare coins. But he was so into it and he was a wealthy man. So he bought all the local laundromats.
Oh,
and this is no joke. I mean, these are eccentric people that I deal with.
Right.
He spent all of his time going through the bags of the silver coins that were being spent. And because Carson City is a rare mint, and he figured there would be lots of local stuff. He had stacks of Carson City silver dollars
cool.
and things like that.
Yeah.
That are, every one of them is a collectible.
You know, I've come across a few of these people as well. They have hordes of it, and usually they're in the change business. The question I would have is, with these ubiquitous Coinstar machines, are they checking through the change?
I can't imagine they don't, because these businessmen are clever people.
Yeah. Probably.
I mean, these are clever.
Every now and then one will sneak by. I mean, a Mercury dime was on the floor of my wife's car. I said, well, how did that get there?
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
They can do that. But always remember, with quarters, put them in your hand, just open them out, and put them under the light. The modern quarters have two distinct colors. They're bimetallic.
Oh.
And so you could automatically tell if you've got a silver coin in there.
Interesting. All right, let's take a break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll get back to our phones shortly, and we'll check the email bag as well when we return. Organ Trio there on our bumper music. It's Vox Pop. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551. David Tripp and Bob Scott are with us. Bob, you said there's a big stamp display in Connecticut going on.
Oh, yes. That's it. Yes, the most interesting. One of the most interesting facets of the hunting organizations are the bird hunters, the duck hunters. And in 1934, they formed an organization that started generating funds through license sales. And of course, to effect the sale of the license, they produced stamps. And the stamps were always taken from pictures of wildlife. So basically, you took a picture of whatever you were going to shoot, and you made a stamp of it, and you had to affix it to your license. And unlike stamps, which are cancelled with, you know, hand cancels or machine cancels, the way you cancel a hunting permit or a duck stamp is to write your name across it. So you sign your license the stamp and you cancel it. And of course, the early ones, because they were quite scarce and spending, you know, a few dollars on a hunting license in 1934, just 5 years after the Great Depression, was some money, so they're actually worth something now. But they not only do it at a federal level, but they do it at a state level. And for people, for the stamp design to be chosen, it's artists, usually from the hunting fraternity or wildlife artists in general, they submit
their pictures,
and there's a big judgment at the end of the year, and the winner gets a certain amount of money, and they get their stamp sorted out.
Isn't there a Coen Brothers movie that has this?
The husband of Marge Gunderson in Fargo is a duck stamp designer.
Yes.
Well done.
Yes,
not
indeed.
Many people remember that.
Great movie.
Yes.
I don't see too many movies, but the Coen Brothers, yeah, I'm all in on that.
They do some things. And of course, where's the display? I forgot which town
it's
is
in,
it?
Is it Stamford?
Stamford.
Yeah. Stamford, Connecticut.
They produce limited prints for every, because it's a competition. They not only produce the little stamps, but they produce big signed, usually signed by the artist.
Yeah.
And they have actually wonderful wildlife artwork, and there's a huge display in Stamford,
cool.
And it's running for, I think, the next
couple
of months.
3 or 4 months, isn't it? Yeah.
So if you want to learn about hunting permits, just the federal ones, you can go see them.
You know, in the brief period of time, the number of years when I was a kid when I was collecting stamps, I did somehow acquire a potato revenue stamp.
Right.
And I don't know anything about, I never did learn anything about those.
They produce stamps for everything, playing cards. One of the things I thought was fascinating, especially in the modern era, is they produced a marijuana tax stamp in the 1930s or 40s. And they produced it purely so they could prosecute people for not having it.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Which is brilliant. It was just a way of closing loopholes.
It's always about money, isn't it?
If there's a tax... The word philately is love of taxes. Stamps are
really?
Predominantly
taxes. No wonder
taxes.
I dislike Bob so much.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of reasons. Yeah. Ryan in New Windsor writes,
you can distaste.
I have a number of coins that were my great-grandfather's after his World War I service. This one has always been an interesting one for me. Can you tell me more about its history? Ryan, you violated Rule 1. Don't send pictures because nobody can see them. But I'll describe it. It's a bronze little coin. Maybe I don't know what the size is. It says service with American Army in the World's War 1917. And there's a picture of a World War I soldier holding a rifle, and he's aiming it. What is it?
It is a commemorative token or medalette.
Yeah.
Probably brass, I would think, something
like
that.
Looks like it.
And it's more a souvenir than anything else. Wonderful little pieces of history.
You know, okay.
Not of any enormous value whatsoever, but still fun things.
A lot of people went to work. KM writes in, valuable pennies is the subject heading.
Okay.
Oh, it's Chris from Lake Luzerne. Sorry. Once found a penny from 1940 or 42 when I was a kid and told that it was worth a few bucks. Moving forward, I saved all the pennies I get and plan to look through them one day. Any pointers on what pennies might be worth more than a penny, but maybe not so uncommon?
Okay, well, first of all, the best thing to look for are what we call wheaties, which are any coin, any pennies, cents properly, if we'll be technical, that were made before 1959. And they have the sheaves of wheat on the reverse. And in that series, we'll give you a couple. Let's see. If you get a 1909 with a little S under the date, 1909 S with a little VDB under the chest, 1914 with a little D, 1915 with an S, 1931 with a D, and a 1922 with no mint mark at all, those are all real good rarities, and those will get you, a couple $100 each.
So get the red book. That's the thing to do.
That's the bottom line.
Okay.
Guidebook to United States coins.
Couple more emails here, and then we'll go back to the phones. Bob Scott and David Tripp are joining us, 800-348-2551. Donna writes, I have three $1 coins, 1881, 87, and 1897. On the front, they say, E pluribus unum. Do they have any value? That's from Donna.
Well, they do have value. They are what we call Morgan dollars. They were designed by George Morgan, and they were struck between 1878 and 1904, and then another 1 year in 1921. They are probably the most collectible of all coins, big following by collectors. Condition is going to be paramount in terms. The dates that you gave me are all pretty common, but remember, because of the price of silver,
ounce of silver
is close to somewhere around $35 these days. And when you work it all out, they will melt. The melt value is going to be between, let's say $22, $23 in any event. And their collectible value, if they're in good condition, may be considerably higher.
You know, I've seen these ads on TV. Oh, they found a whole treasure trove of silver dollars.
They've done it, yes.
And what, Carson City? Or I don't know where they're from.
Well, the
government bags,
had,
you get bags of them when you invest.
There are bags and bags. It is amazing. There was one hoard that was found in the 70s or 80s, and had 4.3 million silver dollars.
That's a lot of silver dollars.
And everybody thought, it's going to flood the market. But the guys who, and they were all uncirculated, they did a very clever marketing campaign and made them collectible. And it, because more people could enter the market at approachable price points, more people started collecting them and the value started going up.
You'd think E. Howard Hunt would have gotten them all back in the day in the 70s.
He probably got a few of them.
All right, a last email for now, and then we got to hit the phones again. Yes, this is from James. There's a certain individual running for president right now who is currently selling commemorative coins with his face on it. According to him, everyone should buy one before the supplies run out. His supporters believe that these coins will one day be worth a great deal. Do you think there's any truth to this? And if so, could the rest of us be missing out? And that's from James.
Well, that's a loaded question.
Yeah, enjoy.
Thank you very much, Ray. I appreciate
it. Thanks, James.
It's my last day on Vox Pop.
Okay.
Privately minted things, they may have, from the point of view that people do collect political Americana, there's always a chance. I have no idea what they are being issued at, so I don't know if they're going to go up and down in value.
Right.
Generally speaking, modern issues are something I personally am not wild about, simply because I'm an old, grumpy old man.
Right.
And most of it is mass-produced now, whereas with Washington memorabilia or Lincoln memorabilia from back in the day, as we know, because David worked on an absolutely spectacular collection, it was, I mean, serious money.
Oh, the Lincolniana and things of Lincoln and his election. I mean, they're fabulous. I don't know how many are made.
They generally don't remember... They don't remember the losers.
I want to know how much the Trumpy trout will be worth. Did you ever see the ad for that?
Oh, no.
It's a talking trout?
Oh, yes.
Oh, it goes on the wall, Trumpy trout? That's got to be a gold mine.
I remember one from The Sopranos, which I think is a variety on a theme.
I'll tell you what, if I put that up at the office, I'll be fired in a day. All right, let's go back to the phones, and we'll go to Chris in Del Mar. Chris, you're on.
Hi there. Yes, thanks. This is all fascinating. I have a small collection of canceled stamps sent from West Africa when I was in the Peace Corps in the late 60s.
Yes.
From Upper Volta, which is now called Burkina Faso.
Yes.
You know, my assumption is they're really not worth anything except my own nostalgia, but
yes.
I have the opportunity to ask you, so what do you think?
I think you're right. I mean, there's an awful lot of material out there. They're probably wonderful keepsakes from your time in the Peace Corps, which is absolutely marvelous. But scarcity, no. The odd anomalies you get from that era are particular flights. They travel on aircraft, and they made particular caches. But there is such a grassroots collection, stamp collecting in sort of British Africa and around there, that there's no shortage. There's enough for everybody to go around.
Okay.
So, and there are no particularly...
I'm not surprised.
Right. And there are no particularly limited issues in stamps. There were usually enough for everybody that wanted one.
All right, Chris.
Well, I kept them for nostalgia. I'll keep them for just the same.
The best reason for doing it.
Chris, thanks for the call. Now we'll go to Debbie in Kingston. Hello, Debbie. You're on with David Tripp on Bob Scott.
Hello. Thank you.
Hi, Debbie.
We were going through my dad's dresser because my parents both passed, and we found a bunch of coins. He was a dabbler, but there's coins we've never heard of or saw before, like a walking Liberty and coins that are 100 years old. Now, we were told that the only value is the metal in it. Is that right, or is there anything to do with the age?
There can be to do with the age. So if you've got a walking Liberty that's a half dollar, made from 1916 onward until the 40s, yes, there can be value in them. I think, as Ray alluded to earlier, the best thing to do is go to the local library and take out the Red Book, as they call it, Guidebook to United States Coins, and just spend an afternoon looking at the dates on them and seeing if there's anything that matches up. They will also give you a little primer on how to describe the condition.
Ah, yes.
And that way, it's very easy to do, and you'll be able to figure out whether, you know, because they're the melt value of the standing Liberty or walking Liberty half dollar will be about $11, $12 right now. I think there's a good chance there might be some more value. It's a very desirable design.
Okay.
Very desirable.
And you know,
okay, because we
ahead,
did
Debbie.
Try to take it to a coin collector, and he was telling us they're not worth. They're
That's
only worth
probably because he was going to buy them from you.
But we did want him to buy them from us, but we didn't. You know, when he told us they were just worth 25 cents for the quarter, we took it back.
No. Somebody is playing a game.
That's not good, Debbie.
No.
By the way,
okay,
Debbie.
So
and if you want to send me a picture or two, I can give you a little guidance there when I see it. If you send it to Coin and Stamp Guys, all one word, at BERK.com, I can tell you whether it's worth the $11 or get a better dealer.
Debbie, by the way, you know, my wife and I, we metal detect, and we fancy that we'll get something very valuable. And so I bought one of these Red Books. They're not very expensive. The only question I would have for David while you're here is, you know, ours is now 2, 3, 4 years old. When do you need to buy a new one?
Mine's 12 years old.
Okay. And do you do a lot of metal detecting?
No, but I do a lot of coin looking.
Okay.
Every couple of years.
Yeah.
The market right now, quite candidly, is pretty flat.
Okay.
So you're good to go.
And
don't forget, those are also retail prices you're seeing.
You want to know something, though? There are no nails in that book at all. None.
You need the Nail Collector's Guide, which was written by Bob Scott.
No, that's it's the nail supplement. It's the brown book.
The brown book.
It's the brown book.
Yes, well.
Smells a little of creosote.
Yes. Okay, so let's go to Guilford, Connecticut. Terry, you're on.
Hi, Ray.
Hi.
Hi,
Terry.
In regard to those quarters, that you might find in a change machine or at the bank or something, or pocket change. I think the best bet, and these aren't like super valuable, but they're semi-valuable. They might be worth $20 or thereabouts. You look for the 2019 or 2020 W quarters. That's the W West Point Denmark, and they only made
Okay.
They're in more limited numbers. There are all sorts of odd and curious rarities. There's a book called The Cherry Picker's Guide, which has all the funny little design changes and things like that that will give a common coin a little extra cachet and a few dollars extra value.
Terry, thanks a lot. So that kind of goes with, that's an addendum to the Red Book.
Exactly.
If you want to cut to the chase.
The old adage in the coin business is buy the book before the coin. And the problem is there are just too many books written and my bookshelves are groaning.
All right, let's go to Wappingers Falls and it's Merwin. Merwin, you're on.
Yes, how are you, gentlemen? This is about stamps.
Okay, Mark.
There are many different commemorative stamps, the flag set, famous Americans, and presidents, as you know.
Yes.
However, is there a set of commemorative stamps that commemorate bungalow colonies in Sullivan County?
Ah, well, that's interesting.
Well, there should be, obviously, but as far as I know, no.
Okay, where are you going with this, Merwin? It's been a while.
I was going to say, I'm missing the direction.
Yes, it's been a while. I've been looking for a particular stamp of the Brodsky Bungalow Colony in Kiamisha Lake, but I can't seem to find it.
Interesting. Well, I guess we're not going to... apparently not, Merwin, but it is great to hear from you.
Thank
I was
w-
wondering what happened to you, and now I know you're still alive.
Well, nothing. I had a replacement, a hip replacement. And I had an ear piercing.
Okay, good for you, man. Hey, that's great. Hey, thank you for the call. And now let's go to Merle in Argyle. Hello, Merle. You're on.
I'm on. Okay.
Hi, Merle.
Hi. When you say salvage, you're not really meaning that they melt the silver, gold, and stuff.
Yes,
is that
I.
Correct?
No, I hate to say it. Yes, I do.
Yep.
Certain coins.
That what?
They do melt them. There are certain coins that are of such limited collector value. For example, $20 gold pieces today are trading at about $2,500 a piece, just a simple gold value. And for a common date, dealers can't sell them for that amount of money. And so, but they will buy it from you. But to make their money back instantly and so that they don't go broke with the price of gold because it's so volatile, they literally will take them and they will have them melted down.
Uh-huh.
And it is.
Now, when you say that, are you saying that you can destroy U.S. Mint?
That's a great question, Merle.
You cannot deface United States coinage. You're not supposed to melt it down, but that doesn't mean that it's not happening regularly.
It's because if you do it properly, nobody knows.
The government
is well aware of it happening.
All right.
Yeah.
So
there you go, Merle. Hey, great question, and we'll leave it there here. All right, we have 1 minute to go. What did I leave out on our list? The classic Universal Monster Series stamps.
Right.
That's good for Halloween.
Well, Halloween has always had good stamps. The thing is, I found out who do you think the number one monster depicted on stamps?
Frankenstein
worldwide?
Monster.
Nope.
Dracula?
Dracula by a country mile.
Okay.
Dracula is the guy. I guess probably because he's in the public domain.
Oh, interesting.
But surely Frankenstein would be public domain.
He might be by now, but Dracula has always been the public domain here.
The Universal...
The characters themselves are probably not. Well, they might just be the makeups themselves. Maybe
that was 1930. That movie.
Yeah, the 1931. Yeah.
Which one?
Frankenstein.
Yes, that's right.
Interesting.
Because the first Dracula was 1920. That's Nosferatu.
The Max von Schreck.
Did you ever see the Mexican version of that? The Spanish speaking version of that? Bela Lugosi shot during the day, and they used the same set at Universal. And had a different Dracula in Spanish, different cast. You ever see that?
I've never seen it.
It's really cool.
Well, do they have split screen?
Well, I guess we could do that. All right, I guess we're off topic. And you know what? This has been a weird show, and off we go. David Tripp, Bob Scott, once again, how do we find you guys if somebody needs to email you?
We are at Coin and Stamp Guys, all one word, at Berk, B-E-R-K, .com.
This is your last show for the year?
It's up to you.
Yes.
Oh, well, we're booked already. I mean, you would know better than I. But do you want to come back next year?
That'll make it 21
for
years.
For David's, it'll be my 20th.
And that'll be Bob's 20th. We have to do it.
All right, fair enough. Well, then, my agent will call you guys. The Hyde Collection in Glens Falls is an underwriter. The Hyde Collection in Glens Falls, contemporary art on view now through January 5th. Zach Lobdell, Ethos, open Thursday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Learn more at hydecollection.org. Williams College Department of Music presenting the Balor Day Quartet Tuesday, November 5th at 7:30 p.m. in Brooks Rogers Recital Hall, music.williams.edu. At ArtSpark, Saratoga Springs, New York, digital marketing and web design for all creatives taking artists and arts businesses online, artspark.com. Well, that's it. Fun show. We'll see you tomorrow, and it's Ghost Stories with the writing crew.